It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. If you were born before 1985, you are part of a group that knows life before and after the internet. This is a staggering thought. When the pre-digital generations are gone, no one in the Western world will ever know what it was like to not have the internet at our fingertips or cell phones in our pockets. And most of us who got connected in the interim lack an awareness of what a change it has been in our lives. Michael Harris has taken a long look at both sides of life, pre- and post-digital. He unplugged and lived life without cell phones and the internet for a stretch. He rediscovered solitude during that time. His best-selling book, The End of Absence, Reclaiming What We've Lost in a World of Constant Connection, is now out in paperback, and he's joined us to talk about his digital sabbatical and what we lose and gain when we unplug. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
So you compare this period of time when the digital world became a part of our daily lives to the Enlightenment, when the printing press was invented and literacy skyrocketed. That was the first time for widespread engagement in media. I don't know anybody that thinks of that as a negative thing, but what comparisons do you make?
Well, I mean, there's an important difference, actually. When I think about the advent of the internet, I think of it as a Gutenberg moment, and this is distinguished from a Gutenberg era, which is more what the printing press brought on in the 15th century and the centuries after. When you think about it, it wasn't until the 19th century that people were actually commonly literate. So it took hundreds of years before people had a daily experience of what the printing press brought. That enlightenment that, yes, was obviously a positive thing, took generations and generations and generations to unfold. Whereas for the first time in history, we have massive communication change happening within a single generation. So it's equivalent to the printing press in size, but not in speed of delivery. So for the first time, we actually get to live on both sides of that moment, as it were.
Well, what's interesting is looking back in history in how people dealt with information. And there's a very interesting part of your book where you talk about the idea that the digital world is sort of an external hard drive for our brains. People did that in the pre-literate era. It's just that their external hard drive was other people.
Yes, right. I mean, I think the important thing to remember is that all the issues that the internet brings up, these are basic human issues, right? It's never going to be completely foreign, right? Even the invention of writing. I mean, Socrates was worried that was going to mean we'd have no memories because we were offloading our memories onto, instead of other people, onto paper. Or oral traditions would become literary traditions, and that would negatively impact our intellectual experience. He worried about that as well. So yes, these are basic human issues that we've been struggling with for thousands of years. How do we talk to each other? How do we know the world? So understanding the history of our technologies helps us to, I guess, be more active in the way that we interact with them.
I think we don't understand how these communications affect us and how our behavior changes when we are in the moment, when we are dealing with it. Probably everyone has gone through that experience, if they are connected, of, oh, I left my cell phone somewhere. And then having that, you call it a digital leash, kind of. The idea that you feel anxiety because you have this extension of your own body and your persona that you checked a million times a day, or you got texts from people. And if you forgot it in your car, or you left it at home or something, all of a sudden you feel like something's wrong.
If you type fear of being into the Google search engine, the first answer that comes up is fear of being without a cell phone, fear of being without my mobile, or fear of being alone. And these are all the same fear, I think. We have this deep-seated desire to be socially groomed at all times. And when we find a helpful device like a phone that is providing those dopamine bursts on a really regular level, we're going to covet that level of connection, right? And we're going to desire it in the same way that we desire sugars and fats. But just as sugars and fats become a problem when there's too much of them, we now have to, you know, hold back on consuming the whole chocolate cake.
Now, before you decided to take your digital sabbatical, did you realize your leash to things like your phone or to the internet?
Oh, sure. I remember a couple of years ago, I was working at a magazine, at Vancouver Magazine, as an editor. And I was one of those guys with three computer screens in front of his face and a cell phone going off in his hand the whole time. And there was a friend that was trying to text me, actually, this one afternoon. And he texted me. I didn't get back to him in 5 minutes. So, of course, he assumed I had passed away or something. And so he texted me again and said, "Are you alive or what?" And I remember looking down at it and in my kind of harried state, reading that literally, "Are you alive?" And I look up at these glowing rectangles that I spent the majority of my day staring at and just thought, you know, this is not really my life. This is not the life I imagined for myself. I was spending most of my life pushing content around instead of creating something. I was reacting to digital stimulus, these digital prompts. And it was almost like I was, you know, just this cog inside of a giant social media machine instead of living in a visceral way in the world. I ended up quitting my job.
You made this decision, this purposeful decision to get away from that job and then get away from the digital world. Did these things happen at the same time? Did you say, well, I'm going to quit my job and try this? Or was it a result of, I want to get away from it for a while, and then you started to, I guess, feel the effects of being away?
I wasn't independently wealthy, so I wasn't thinking I'm going to throw down my phone and wander away. I did figure out, how can I leave this world? How can I? And the smartest way I could figure out to try and re-engineer some sanity into my life was to pitch a book about where did my sanity go, you know. And so that's where the idea for the book in the first place came from. The book was, in a way, my life raft. It was a way for me to figure out what changed in my life and why. It provided me with the income to step away from my daily office life and explore that world.
How did your way of thinking and writing and working on this very project change when you got away from the digital world? Was there a period where you had a hard time transitioning?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, as a kind of digital fast, near the beginning of my work, I took a month off with no internet and no cell phone, and it was sort of crushingly lonely, actually. Even though there were human beings all around me, I was cutting that digital leash. And anybody who's tried even being without their phone for a day knows that there's a kind of panic that sets in, right? So I think I kind of went through detox in a way. And then coming out the other end, the thing that I learned, and not just through the detox, but through a great deal of research and interviews with very smart people all over the world, was just how much we can curate and engineer our media environment in order to do the kind of work or the kind of thinking that we want to accomplish. So some kinds of thinking are really well suited to being connected all the time. The problem is that we think all thinking, all connection should be faster, stronger, longer. And we forget that there are different modes of thinking. So, for example, if you write an essay by hand, if you write it on a typewriter, and if you write it on your cell phone, you're going to end up with three different essays, even though the same person's thoughts are being filtered through. It's the screen itself, the mode by which you think, becomes part of the content of the thinking.
What did you discover about having the time away from input from other people? A lot of times now we present ideas you know, right now I look at Donald Trump and I think that his behavior is being reinforced by a certain degree of crowd speak. You think about the discourse we have now and how people, if they have time to stop and think about what they're going to say without it entering the public realm, even if that public realm is just your social circle of your social network, if that changes what they really think.
I think you're right about that. When you're online, you have collective approval system, right? When I'm on Twitter, I know that an idea is a good idea if many people retweet it. And if nobody likes it, it must be a bad idea. And when I look at Amazon and I see that a book has a higher ranking than another book, I think that book must be better. So you get a sort of hive mind approach to opinions and thoughts. Whereas when you are disconnected, obviously you're still impacted by culture on some level, but it becomes much more easy to have an independent approval system. So I decide for myself, is that a good book? I decide for myself, is that a worthwhile thing to think about? And you become a little bit more independent of other people.
You are reconnected now. Do you work breaks in to the way that you approach the digital world? Or is it something where having the absence from the digital world long enough to realize how it was affecting you has kind of given you just a different permanent perspective on what you're doing so you don't get sucked back into some of the very things you were just talking about?
Yeah, it was kind of a reset, I think. Obviously, we need to be connected. There's nothing evil about connective technology any more than there's anything evil about a knife in your kitchen. You just need to know how to use it, right? So I guess on the other end of all this, I do little things like I will batch process my email, meaning I just check it 5 times a day instead of checking it every time there's a pause in a conversation the way I used to. And I'll just take the time to leave the house without my phone at least once a day also. So these little shifts in perception. Sometimes when I'm walking down the street and I see like a couple teenagers hunched over their phone, kind of burrowed into it, I think about monkeys picking lice out of their fur. And that kind of, the weirdness of that obsessive social grooming that we do through our phones is more apparent to me now than it was before.
Michael Harris is the author of The End of Absence, Reclaiming What We've Lost in a World of Constant Connection. It's now out in paperback. He's been joining us this morning. Michael, thanks for talking to us today.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this. It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.